Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Dorky Mets Podcast. I'm your host, Charlie DeLuca, and with me, as always, is Corne Hogeveen, and back with us is the one and only Del Alba. Missed last episode with a bit of a knock there, but he's back from the IL and ready to talk about Mets baseball. How are you guys doing today?
Doing great. Yep. Feels good to be nice and healthy again. At least I can talk now. Yeah. I wouldn't have been pleasant on the show last week.
I was going to say, the most doing a podcast is that you can voice your opinions. Otherwise, it wouldn't really be much of a podcast.
Without coughing, sneezing all over the air.
Well, there may be a World Cup game on Saturday between the U.S. and Corne's Netherlands, but as of right now, we're all under the same fandom roof, and that is being, of course, Mets fans. And not much has happened in the last couple weeks since me and Corne talked at the beginning of the month, but we do have some rumors and speculation, as always, during the off season. And I guess there's no better place to start with the big fish that the Mets have to figure out where they're going with, and that's Jacob DeGrom, obviously. He is a free agent after opting out of his contract. There's been some speculation about whether he's a favorite to re-sign with the Mets or whether the Mets are a favorite to re-sign him. You saw the other day that Tampa Bay was maybe interested in him. Obviously, the big players in the free agent market, like the Dodgers, the Rangers have spent recently. Those teams have been rumored to have at least lukewarm interest. But right now, at least, Corne, it seems that the Mets are the favorite to re-sign DeGrom. But you've also heard that they have a backup plan and maybe another veteran starting pitcher who is on the free agent market.
Yes, at this point, it seems like the tables are a little bit turning to the Mets. In the beginning of the offseason, we heard that Jacob DeGrom to the Mets maybe was 50-50, maybe a little bit less than 50 to the Mets. But recently, we see the Rangers go out and be very interested in Carlos Rodon. So maybe the Mets turns the Mets away, and it seems like it's Justin Verlander or Jacob DeGrom for the top rotation spot. Although the Mets also had a Zoom meeting with Rodon, so probably one of the three will be a New York Met next year. And I take DeGrom. I mean, we know what he can do when he's healthy. It's Jacob DeGrom more of an injury risk than Justin Verlander at his age? Maybe, maybe not, but I think that's debatable. That's to be seen. And is Rodon that valuable for a probably 5 or 6 year deal? I think you can go the first 2 to 3 with Rodon pretty well, but he has also had his fair share of injuries in the past. And I'm a little bit concerned with Carlos Rodon and without maybe his high velo on his fastball, what he would be able to do without it. And Jake just seems to still be able to throw hard. So, and it will probably hopefully cost like a 3 year deal. So with all that being said, if I have to pick between all those three guys, my pick would be our old friends, let him retire as a Met, be in the Hall of Fame with a Mets cap on and be a Met for life with a 3 year deal. I don't know if that's would be a Met for life type of deal, but who knows?
Yeah, and I think that that's an interesting point you bring up, because it almost seems as if the novelty of having, that's not the right word, but the aura of having DeGrom and the optics of having DeGrom be a Met for life, it'd be a little bit disappointing to see him throw on another uniform. And obviously we've seen what he could do when he's healthy. If he was, pitching like he has been, the last few years in a different uniform. That would be a tough pill to swallow for Mets fans. And I think the question becomes, Dell, are you comfortable with replacing DeGrom? Because you look at his stats from last year, while they're very good, they're not the same as we've become accustomed to. And they're certainly, I'm not going to say easily replaceable, but certainly you look at other pitchers that have the ability to replicate those stats. And Corney mentioned the two guys are on the free agent market that are readily available in Verlander and Rendon, who obviously Verlander just won the Cy Young. And Rodon has become a very good pitcher the last couple of years. Are you comfortable, should DeGrom leave, replacing him with one of those two guys in Carlos Rodon?
Well, I mean, it depends on the situation here. I don't think it's going to be a possibility to get DeGrom for – he's probably going to look for a long-term commitment, right? He's at an age – he's 34 years old. He's had health injuries, but he's also, you know, won Cy Youngs, and he's a beast. Everybody knows he's amazing. He knows his worth. He's probably looking for a long-term deal so he can, you know, have the job security. I don't know if I feel comfortable with the Mets, you know, having a long-term deal where you're paying him $45 million a year, because that's what his market value is right now. Verlander, on the other hand, he is 39 years old, but he just won a Cy Young. I think the expectations for Verlander would be a 1 or 2 year deal. You know, given his age, and he would fit perfect with the Mets timeline to win. The Mets are in a weird phase right now where they're concentrating on their farms. They're not trading farm assets because they want to develop their farm. So I think it would be ideal for them to get somebody like Verlander or Rodon, because Rodon is the younger of the three. I wasn't really prepared for Rodon, so I had to do some quick Googling. But, you know, Corey likes to throw curveballs, and I'm always ready for them. But Rodon, on the other hand, you're talking about a $32.5 million per year. That's his market value. So he'd probably get a long-term deal because of his age, or something along the lines where it'll be a 5 to 6 year deal, but there'll be opt-out options in between after 2 or 3 years. So to answer your question, I think I'd be more comfortable if the Mets signed Verlander out of the three, just because it would be more ideal for the roles. I love Jake DeGrom. I think he's amazing. He's had an amazing career for us. It would suck to see him in a different team. But his health concerns and the type of deal that he'd probably get, I don't think it would really fit with the Mets' future, you know, development of their prospects. And that's where I'll leave it at. I'm not saying that they're rebuilding, but they do consider the payroll in a few years. They want to have a strong payroll, and if they get Jake for 4 years, 4 or 5 years, it might cause difficulties to get that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a interesting point you bring up, because we saw at the deadline the Mets' reluctance to give away prospects. So they're kind of in this interesting kind of limbo where they want to win now and they have the payroll to win now, but they also want to build a sustainable winner. And I think you mentioned the fact that Verlander's contract or projected contract would, I think, fit very well. And you said this as well, that 2 year deal, him and Scherzer would essentially be off the books at the same time. And, you know, Steve Cohen said when he took over 3 to 5 years, they want to be winning a championship. That would be, you know, the end of that 2 year contract would be the fifth year. So I think you bring up good points there. And obviously all three of these guys have question marks surrounding them. Verlander, you know, just had Tommy John, his first year back from Tommy John. DeGrom has an injury history. Rodon has an injury shoulder. So I think, Corney, it becomes a question of, are you the most comfortable with DeGrom because he's a known commodity and he's been in the this time? Or is it more of a performance-based thing where you're thinking to yourself, hey, if all three of these guys are healthy, DeGrom has the best chance to be the best out of that grouping of that trio of pitchers?
A little bit of both, but also I don't think it would maybe cost a 4-year deal. I don't see Jay getting a 5-year deal for that money right now because of that health concerns. If that's the case, yeah, then I think the Mets should go another route. I don't think the Mets should give him that 5-year deal. Maybe I would go 3rd year with maybe an option after it. That's the max I would give. But I see that's happening when you pay him that $45 million, which Dell is talking about. And I mean, at the end, he was healthy. He showed he was healthy. His numbers, maybe overall numbers, his standard numbers weren't Jacob DeGrom-like, but if you look at the rest, his only blemish was really his barrel percentage against. So if he can cut that down a little bit, his strikeout numbers were amazing, his hard hit rates were solid, his walk numbers were amazing. So he was still really, really good. And his expected ERA was 2.24. So those are still crazy numbers. And I think even with that, he can be slightly better if he cuts down on that barrel percentage, cuts down on that home runs. And I think that upside is higher than what you can get out of a Cy Young winner in Verlander. I understand that. But it would, like Dell mentioned, it's a good point. It would be not for more years than 3+ option top. And if he wants more, then I think Verlander is the better route for that 2-year high AAV type deal.
Yeah, no, it definitely is going to be one of the major question marks the rest of the offseason. At least until DeGrom and or Verlander assign somewhere, and I think there'll be a lot of discussion up until that point, including right here with the three of us. So let's go on to maybe another area that the Mets are looking for. Obviously, they have a lot of holes to fill in the rotation and the bullpen, but also, designated hitter is a bit of a open-ended question. Last year, the platoon of Dom Smith and J.D. Davis didn't work out, obviously. They made basically two trades to essentially replace that platoon in Daniel Vogelbach and Darren Ruff. Both are set to return to the roster next year. However, Ruff was aptly not very good when he came over from the Mets. Vogelbach was solid, but I think left a little bit to be desired, especially down the stretch after getting off to a hot start. So I think this is an area that, other than the rotation and the bullpen, is the biggest question mark heading into the 2023 season. And obviously, Dell, one big piece in Jose Abreu that potentially could have been a fit there at the DH signed with the Astros a couple of days ago. So that's taken off the board. So where do the Mets going in terms of their DH options for next year? Keep in mind the fact that Vogelbach and Ruff are, as of right now, set to be on the roster in 2023.
Yeah, I think they're going to definitely stick to internal options. I don't think there's any reason why you wouldn't want Vogelbach against, you know, right-handed pitchers. His numbers have been pretty good. And against left-handed pitcher, you got a guy who hasn't been doing very good defensively at third base in Escobar, but he can hit lefties. So, and I've talked to this about, I talked to Corey about this before, and but you know, I'll let him get to his ideas as well. But I think it would make sense to move the diminishing third baseman in Escobar as a DH against lefty, and get the new kid Beatty the opportunity at third. I think that Beatty has the projection to be a solid third baseman option. I think his his defensive skills isn't the best, but it's an upgrade to Escobar. So that would fix the DH situation if you move Escobar against lefties and Vogelbach against righties. And Darren Ruff can, I don't know, he's going to have to prove himself in spring training, but I see him being dropped.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Del, on this one. Vogelbach was 15th in the league against right-handed pitching on weighted runs created plus. So he's fair. I think people underrate how good Daniel Vogelbach is against right-handers. So to me, that spot is set. One thing you need is the guy who you have against left-handed pitching. And with how the roster is set now, you have multiple options how you can fill that. You can play Escobar as the DH. I think Beatty will definitely make the roster, so he will get the majority of the time at third. You can maybe get Alvarez a day in as the DH and play James McCann behind the plate, or Nito, or whoever, however that the roster is set. So to me, you have Mark Vientos, who we might still have, who can be a guy if the other options don't work out. Or you can go out and get a bench guy, a benched outfielder, bridge to a name I might mention later in this episode, that can be on the bench, that is versatile, can play some spots in the field, not like Darren Ruff, like Del mentioned. He is atrocious in the field, so you can have a bench player to also be in that mix to face left-handed pitching as a DH. So lots of options the Mets already have in-house, and you might add a small piece to that puzzle from outside your organization, but I don't see any need for an upgrade or an old guy like JD Martinez, who is on the down trend in his career, to be that guy when we have a guy like Escobar who fits that role.
Right. Or you can trade for Rafael Devers, right? And put Escobar at DH. No?
You could do that. That would definitely be a big move. But I think you guys both hit on the fact that there's so many internal options, and it really will come down to roster construction next spring. Obviously, this 3 months before pitchers and catchers report. But you mentioned two guys who I think would be perfect as a platoon. In Beatty and Alvarez. I think Beatty is someone who projected has maybe not the best glove at third base. We saw him in very, very limited time, I want to stress, have some trepidation over there at the hot corner. And a young guy, I feel like he could definitely thrive, playing one side of the game, really only focusing on hitting major league pitching, because before he was injured, he was doing okay with the bat. And obviously, if they, hold on to McCann and Nito and have the possibility of keeping three catchers on the roster, you could see Alvarez getting every now and then a role at bats as a DH, and obviously Vientos is there too. And so definitely a ton of options internally, and it will really come down to what other moves they make around the margins of the roster to kind of supplement the big pieces there in the middle, like Lindor and Alonso. I think the DH position is something that the Mets definitely don't need to go out and spend money on with those limited options, like you guys said. JD Martinez is not really a fit for this team right now, and I don't think it'd be wise for them to waste a roster spot on, like Corny said, an aging, declining player. So obviously no Major League Baseball right now. Free agency has gotten well underway. And so we are now going to talk about maybe a couple guys who sneak under the radar a little bit, so to say. Not the big names, not the DeGroms or the Trey Turners, Well, the Rondones, Rodons, excuse me. But guys who, you know, you look in June and July and say, wow, how did X team get Y player for this amount of money? And you know, this is such a steal of a signing. So, you know, a couple of guys from each of Dell and Cornet who fit that profile. And Cornet, you can start off with your guy.
Well, I really, really, really bargain shopped in my two picks. So it's not even that it's really maybe the guys who sign a 1 year, $1 million deal or something like that. So it's truly a bargain picks I made. So let's start with my pitcher and recently DFA'd Ryan Yarbrough from the Rays. I would like the Mets to get him and to make him a full-time reliever. Because mainly, he was just amazing against left-handers last year. He had a 5.14 OPS against lefties. And in his career, he has a 6.43 OPS against lefties. So he can get lefties out. And clear that the Mets need a guy who is great against lefties. So he also limited hard hit contact. He is at the top of the league in hard hit rate and exit velo against, and he doesn't walk hitters. So how nice it is to have a reliever who comes in and just not walk people. I mean, that's a breath of fresh air. So Ryan Yarbrough for me is my pitcher under the radar guy. I think he will fit. Yes, he probably has to face some righties, but if you put him in there, at the right time facing more lefties, I think it would be a sneaky under the radar pickup to get Ryan Yarbrough for our bullpen.
All right, Dell, who's one of your guys?
So I'm also going to go with the pitcher. I've always been a fan of his, and that's Jose Quintana. You know, he was excellent last year. He's got a career ERA of 3.75. So, in other words, you can trust him. He did have, I think, two bad years with the Cubs. However, what I've seen the rest of his career, he would be the type of guy. And with this excellent pitching staff that the Mets have, I think that they can also harvest his potential to be a good starter. You know, it'll be cheaper than getting a guy like Verlander, Bassett even. Probably he's 34 years old. Get him to, like, I don't know, 2-year deal, maybe $30 million. So he's projected right now at $14 million a year. That's what his market value is. So I think a $30 million 2-year deal, maybe with a third club option, would be an ideal deal for the Mets and for Quintana. You know, he's, I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, no, I that's an interesting name. I hadn't thought of that. I think that certainly if the Mets missed out on DeGrom, if they missed out on Bassett, and some of the other guys we talked about earlier in the show, that would be a good choice for a cheaper arm in the back of the rotation. He, I think, did really well for the Pirates last year, and down the stretch, I'm blanking on what team.
Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, him and Montgomery really kind of reshaped that rotation for St. Louis, and provided them a nice little boost to catch and eventually leap over the Brewers in the Central. I think, yeah, if that market, then that's certainly a name that mid-tier market, that's certainly a name that would be intriguing, I think, at least for me.
Yeah, I forgot to mention, he's also a left-handed pitcher, which I think the Mets could use a solid left-handed pitcher in this rotation. So.
Yeah,
go ahead, Carter.
I agree. I know, Dell. I always, when we ask this question, I probably knew that Dell would go with Jose Quintana because he has loved that guy for years now. So, Steve Cohen, please get Jose Quintana so Dell can stop with mentioning Jose Quintana as a free agent.
I can shut up.
Yeah, that's the only reason I have for just. I don't care for the rest. I don't care if this is bad. Let's just stop talking about Jose Quintana. No, it's a solid pickup. He has a very, very solid career. Like, you know, I love lefties who know how to pitch, and he's a lefty who knows how to pitch. And Del, we talked about this already, and he mentioned that his only bad years were with the Cubs. So maybe the Cubs did something that didn't really work with Jose Quintana, because he was really good this year with the Pirates and the Cardinals. And before the Cubs, he also had some very solid seasons with the White Sox. So it's a nice veteran, small type deal pickup that I would definitely be in favor of. And by the way, you didn't respond on my Ryan Yarbrough prick, so let's go.
Yeah, of course, yes. No, I was gonna wait until you did your second player to kind of wrap up both players in one discussion. But yeah, Ryan Yarbrough, that is a name that I think I like what you said, Cornet, about the relief, making him strictly a reliever, because I think that the Rays sometimes with their always bouncing players around, rotation, opener, you know, reliever, it works some of the times. But other times it kind of messes up the flow and the kind of structured schedule that pitchers like to be on, where they know exactly when they're pitching, or they know that, you know, if I pitch the last 2 days, I'm not pitching today. And I, Yarbrough being converted into strictly a reliever kind of would amplify his better traits. Like you said, getting lefties out, chief among them. And obviously the Mets have a huge hole with lefty specialist. We saw last year what happened with Julio Rodriguez and how they weren't really able to get someone else in there to kind of perform admirably there from that side. So yeah, obviously lefty reliever is a big hole, and reliever in general is a big hole, and certainly someone who would come with a relatively cheaply like Yarbrough would be a good choice.
Yep, I definitely agree with that. I think he's had a solid career. He's been used in different situations. The Rays are funny about that, about having openers and starters. But I think if Yarbrough, if you get him to a fixed relief role, he can succeed there. And like Corny mentioned, this is a very cheap option for the Mets. So I do like that pick. And it's one of the guys I wasn't honestly thinking about until you mentioned it, Corny.
All right, Corny.
So move on with the second one.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, it was my bridge with when talking about the DH, but I picked Robbie Grossman as a bit of a bench outfielder who has been great against lefties. So last year he had a 157 wins rated runs created plus, and an 879 OPS versus lefties. He was a little bit above average and outs above average in left and right. So he isn't a liability in the outfield, so he can play there. So he has some versatility. He walks. He was in the 89th percentile in walk rate. So to me, that's a solid, fourth, fifth outfielder you can have on your roster. I think Robbie Grossman, another guy who maybe will cost like $2 million for a year. And he hits lefties very well. He also did that in his career, where he had more success against left-handers than right-handers. And last year really stepped that up. So that's another, guy who you can plug in when the Mets face a lefty, maybe at the DH, maybe play some outfield. He's also a switch hitter, but I would only get him to be that right-handed bat and not really wanting him against righties in any part. So to me, that's a little bit of that fifth outfielder's job, which improves a need the Mets have.
Yeah, no, that's a good choice too. We obviously saw him a little bit with the Braves down the stretch after coming over with I think the Mets were interested in him too at the deadline, but obviously they settled on Darren Ruff. So, yeah, he'd be a good, nice little bench piece, like you said. You know, give him, you know, one or two starts a week against a left-hander, and see what he can do with the bat from the right side of the plate. So, two good choices from you, Corner, as always.
Thank you.
And very cheap options as well. So you went deep with the under the radar. Obviously, two guys not a lot of people know about, and would I think be improvements on the margins for the Mets, and that's what you look for in under the radar acquisition. So, Dell, who is your second player after a nice little pick there in Quintana?
Yeah, well, so I just want to comment on Grossman as well. I mean, it's basically going to be like, for me, it's an upgrade to Ruff, which Ruff is basically nothing. And that sounds so horrible when I say it, but, you know, his production has been very, like, there was just no production from Ruff.
Non-existent, yes.
Right, so I think that Grossman would be definitely a big upgrade from that. And, you know, he's, like Corney said, left-handed option. Four or five fielder, I like it. But I'm going to keep my pick in the outfield. So, and Corney knows what I'm going to say, so he's going to tease me about it. But I would love the Mets, actually, to give Cody Bellinger a shot at center field. We're talking about a guy in 2017 won the Rookie of the Year. He was MVP in 2019. He's got the potential. After he got injured in the World Series in 2019, he hasn't been the same. So, but defensively, he's a strong option for the Mets. He's got a 92 outs above OAA. I'm drawing a blank here. Outs above average. So, you know, given that we can't, you know, if we don't get Nimmo, I think he's a solid consideration for the Mets. He has the speed. He could run. And the kid hustles. And I think he's also – his family's from New York as well. So not that it really matters, but, you know, maybe that'll kind of like get a little fire burning there again for him and get him back to his 2019 form. So that's what I think. I mean, he's going to be like – he's looking for like a one-year deal to bounce back. I think I would give that shot because the only other option out there, center field, that's really worth it is Nimmo. And, you know, it might be hard to get Nimmo and a strong – pitcher in DeGrom or Verlander or Rodon. So you can probably get Bellinger on a 1 year, $20 million deal or under that amount. Not exactly 20. I wouldn't go further than 20. That's the reason why I said it. So that's my pick.
No, I mean, that's an interesting one. I don't love the idea personally because, like I said, he won the MVP in 19, but you know, that's if you want to even discount the 2020 season, that's two full seasons ago that he was productive. I would be tough to let Nimmo go and then to bank replacing him on someone who hasn't really been serving 2019. I like the idea of giving him a 1 year prove it kind of deal, kind of, you know, low risk, high reward. Think that where the Mets are right now in terms of their competitive level, it would be too much of a risk. Had this been, you know, 2013, 2014, where you didn't really know what was going to happen, and they were still kind of a youngish team and were relying on a lot of, you know, young talent to kind of propel them over the top, I'm all for it. Give them a 1 year, you know, $15 million deal. If he does well, then you have an MVP level player. If not, then you move on the next year. But I think that the Mets are just too good of a team to risk their, you know, one of their everyday positions on someone like Bellinger, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you, Charlie. I think the drop off between one of the best center fielders in the game to arguably with the bat, one of the worst hitters in the league is such a major drop off. And I know he's a pretty good defender. I know he has the potential, but to me, that's too much to bank on and too big of a draw between two guys. The only way it could work if you have another spot where you might adjust to that drop with another player at a different position, but then you miss the point because you have to overpay for another position. So to me, I just hope I know it's maybe tough, but I hope that Nimmo could still be re-signed even with a good pitcher, because I'm very worried that the Mets aren't good enough when you lose one of your better players and you add one of the worst hitters over the last couple of years.
Yeah. No, I share that sentiment, and I think it'd be obviously none of us want to lose Nimmo, but I think if we did, the Mets are much better off moving Cannon or Marte to center and, you know, moving McNeil to the corner and shifting around, you know, kind of playing with the roster they already have rather than going out and trying to replace Nimmo's production, you know, 1v1.
Yeah. I think that's a good point, because I believe that you can find a corner outfielder that has been more productive lately and not be that expensive, a Mitch Haniger type. And to me, if you move that around, you can maybe find a spot for Mitch Haniger to play. But it's a very difficult and interesting problem that the Mets have with their center field spot right now.
Yes. Yeah, it's kind of Nimmo or bust for them. But that's another discussion for another podcast. We can save that one for later.
It's Nimmo and Bellinger. In other words, right, bust, right? It's the same thing, really.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are making it same.
Exactly. Yeah. This again, next year when at Citi Field, everyone will be wearing Bellinger jerseys. So
I'm telling you. All right, 27, so Charlie.
Yeah.
If Bellinger does end up with the Mets and he has a good year and he stays after that, Charlie, we should buy Dell jersey from.
I think we'll have to.
You're gonna have to get a Bellinger jersey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very easy promise to make because it's not gonna happen anyway. So
all right. <Well, let's go>
Yeah, it's a record, so we'll cross that bridge if we get that. All right, so obviously, with no action at the major league level, baseball diehards' eyes turn towards the winter leagues, and for Mets fans and for the Mets organization, there's been one huge bright spot with that in the Dominican Winter League, and that's Ron. Absolutely killing it down there in the DR. Obviously, Mauricio is someone who, Dell, you have had your eye on for a while as a resident but the prospect prognosticators, so to speak, have soured on him a little bit. At one time, I think he was a top 50 guy in most on most sites, you know, Baseball America. You know, Keith Law's list, but obviously has not performed well recently, has not really shown patience at the plate. His on-base percentage has been under 300, if I'm not mistaken, for much of his minor league career. And so because of that, he's fallen down the list out of the top 100 and really out of the top five in the Mets prospects rankings, even guys like Parada, and some of the other newer draftees that have now entered the system. So,
name Jet Williams.
Jet Williams. I knew there was one other who was a prized possession there, but yes, of course, you know who I was thinking of. But yeah, what do you make of Mauricio's performance at in the Winter League there, and also the fact that he has moved off of shortstop and is playing third base now?
Well, I mean, look, he's been projected to have the power. That's the thing about Ronnie. You know, when we drafted him, they say that his frame was going to fill up for power. I mean, and you saw it in like 2 years, like between 2020 and 2021, the guy like turned into like a wrestler. He's huge. So he's definitely got the power. It's just he had a little trouble making contact. You know, his on-base percentage last year was at a 296 and batting average 259. But he did hit 26 home runs, 89 RBIs. So look, he's doing great for Los Tigres del Licey. However, it's just Dominican League baseball. It's not like we have major league level pitchers at every single start. These are mostly young guys or guys who couldn't make the majors, you know, and they play baseball. It's not like we got Sandy Alcantara pitching, you know? So
you're not taking much stock into his performance down there.
No, I think that it's for the Mets in terms of trade value. I think it's great that he's building it up. The Mets have, you know, other options at shortstop for long term with Lindor on the team. Third base, you know, he's going to have to compete with Beatty. I'd say Beatty's the much more polished hitter than he is. He's just a guy that I don't believe he's going to be a major league. If he makes the major league, he's going to be less than average is what I'm saying. I think it's good for trade value because we have a bunch of top farm assets that are in the AAA, AA level that we need to start considering moving or promoting or losing them at the draft coming up next week at the Rule 5 draft. I don't think he's eligible because he's still 21, but, you know, it's coming soon.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up a good point. He seems to be blocked no matter what position he moves to. Obviously, shortstop is Lindor for the next 9 years at least, and you have Beatty at third. You have, Jet Williams is a middle infielder as well. There's even talk of maybe moving Parada to third with Alvarez at catcher as well in the farm system in the organization. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, like you said, for trade value at least, it seems like it's a good thing that he's performing well. And I don't know, Corny, do you take stock in Mauricio's performance down there in the Dominican Republic, or not so much?
Well, it's always good to see a hitter doing well in any league. So it's good for him. It's good for his confidence. It's good, like Dell said, for his trade value. It's not like, I mean, the on-base percentage is iffy, but he can rake, he can hit the ball very well, very hard, and he can hit the ball over any fence. So that eventually might play. But with the Mets, it's just, it seems like an issue for Mauricio for a long time. He is blocked there. He now plays third, but like Dell mentioned, there's where Beatty is. There is where Escobar still is. We also have Vientos. We have Jet Williams, who's a middle infielder. So I think his only chance to make it with the Mets is probably the outfield. Play some corner outfield. But we don't know if he's able to. So that's a big if. So there are a lot of question marks for Mauricio to even have a position for this Mets squad. So, I think the best way is to trade him, which to me is unfortunate because I don't love trading prospects because you don't have a position for them, because that maybe makes the Mets give his value up too soon. But I think that's just how it is, unfortunately. And that's what Dell mentioned, and I agree with Dell on that.
Yeah, Corny. I mean, look at Dom Smith. I mean, we all love Dom Smith, but there's no way he's going to play with Pete Alonso at first base. And no. Unfortunately, his value is nothing now.
We could have traded him in 2020 and gotten a big, you know, big, probably a big deal out of it, but you got to trade him when it's high.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think it's what the Mets lack at some in some cases is trading, you know, the players without a position for us. And I don't mind having minor leaguers and prospects with the same position, but you have to find value elsewhere when you have that situation. And right now, I think Mauricio's value is fairly has dropped, but is maybe a little bit on the uprise with his power. So maybe we can get a solid major league player for Mauricio, and I would be very open to trade him. Although, like you mentioned with Don, it's the same case that yes, I want Mets prospect to succeed, and I think we all do. But sometimes it's just the way it is, and it's just the way how it works.
Yeah. No, it'll definitely be interesting to see what they do with Mauricio, because like we said, it seems like he, at least in terms of his progression, so to speak, it's now or never for him, I feel like. Either he's up at a major league team or he's never going to be a consistent major league player like Del was saying, and obviously he's blocked at multiple positions. So it will be, I think, likely that he is no longer in the Mets organization come the start of the 2023 season, and we'll see what they can get back for him. Maybe a nice bullpen arm or a back-end starter, perhaps. But one more item on the agenda before we get to Corday's always titillating trivia question of the episode is some coaching maneuvering for the New York Mets. Eric Chavez, the hitting coach from last year, was promoted, so to speak, to the bench to be the bench coach. The bench coach from last year, Glenn Sherlock, will be moving to the catching coordinator, I guess you could say. So I was trying to think of the right phrasing there. And Jeremy Barnes, who was the assistant hitting coach last year, I believe, is now the head hitting coach, the permanent hitting coach, whatever you want to say. He's a hitting coach now, Jeremy Barnes. So Chavez, who to many is seen as a future manager, obviously was organization. The Mets kind of poached him away from that, and now he'll be Showalter's right-hand man. And I'm sure this is kind of the next stepping stone for him as he tries to get a manager job somewhere down the line. So just wanted to get that out of the way, a bit of maintenance there just to keep everyone updated. Obviously, Chavez was a good hitting coach from all accounts, and now will be, like I said, the bench coach for the 2023 Mets. So now is the time for the part of the show that everybody waits for, me included, is the episode trivia question from Corner. Take it away.
It's been a while since we did one, but you course, might
been doing without Dell. So
you might have seen this recently because that's where I got this question from. But I hope you guys didn't. Whoa. So. Who hit the furthest home run for the Mets in 2022?
The furthest home run? Huh. I mean, my first guess would be Pete Alonso, but knowing you, that's not the answer because that would be too obvious.
You are second and third and fourth, but not first.
I think didn't Alvarez's first home run go like a far distance? I'm gonna say Alvarez because I know his first home run went. It was definitely a long home run. So my guess is gonna be Francisco Alvarez. How about you, Del?
Oh man, yeah. Again, I instantly wanted to say Alonso, but that's definitely not it, as you guys said. The furthest home run, if I had to guess, and I'm trying to remember all these home runs, I know there were some that were clobbered that left me in awe. And I haven't seen this one, Corny.
No, I didn't see it either.
I feel like it's between Vogelbach or Escobar. I'm going to go with Escobar.
Well, it's clear that you guys didn't see the YouTube clip because you're both wrong.
Ah.
It was a catcher. It was James McCann at the Arizona Diamondbacks earlier this season.
No way. I don't believe it.
Yes. The Mets brought out a YouTube clip with the furthest home runs. So you can check it, and you can see that James McCann had the furthest home run for the New York Mets in 2023.
Come on.
How far did it go? How far did it go?
I think, if I remember correct, it was 454.
Huh. I never would have guessed McCann. You could have given me 10 guesses, and I never would have guessed him.
Is that all? He saved it off for that one home run, and that's it?
I was going to say, how many home runs did he hit? Three? Like,
I think it was three, yeah. So, yeah. Like that one was clobbered, though.
Yeah. It's worth two home runs at Yankee Stadium, so I guess four. So, that was a good one, Corne. That was
Thank you.
That was a good one. Yeah. I was both pumped. I think it's the first time both of us got it wrong, no?
I was preparing for like a relief pitcher, too. Like, okay. Yeah. Let me remember the guys like Beto and, these obscure pitchers that we've had.
I told you that I wouldn't pick a relief pitcher question next time, so I didn't.
Yo, Corne, you're tricky.
You still suck, though, Del, so.
Oh, yeah.
Well, maybe it'll be a couple more weeks till our next show, so we'll both be sure to study up on our Mets history.
Study everything, guys.
By the way, next week is the Rule 5 draft, so maybe we'll have an exciting show after the
Rule 5 draft. Yes, we should definitely do a post-winter meeting show.
Yeah, perfect. I agree. There'll
definitely be some moves to be made, so be sure to check that out. But that will do it for this episode of the Dorky Mets Podcast. For Del Alba, Corne Hoogeveen, I have been Charlie DeLuca, and as always, let's go Mets.
Let's go Mets.